Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people hate reading. This week we're doing a twofer. We're doing I Am Legend with Will Smith. We're doing American Sniper. And we bring you movie news at the end of the program. This week we have Jump the Charney, James Stevens.
Hello. And the old guy's here.
So first one we're going to do is I Am Legend.
It's my pick, and so we'll see how much we tear it apart or we don't. It reads as, years after a plague kills most of humanity and transforms the rest into monsters, the sole survivor in New York City struggles valiantly to find a cure.
And we also want to apologize about Ryan not being here. He's still dealing with the after effects of Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah, he's being lazy. Shit.
Or so he says.
And this.
Sorry, Will, I messed up your little thingy here. Don't get mad at me, okay?
Your little thingy.
This movie.
I think he would get mad.
So we should start it out. There's only one really good acted scene in this whole movie, and it's the saddest effing part in the whole movie. Is the one where he has to kill his dog.
Well, that's the scene that's talked about the most. I don't know if that's the best scene, but it certainly is the one, because everybody, you know, that's a dog lover of any kind. I mean, it's hard to take, and it's true. And you can, and he. I thought he did quite the job of
showing what.
Yeah,
you know, just
I mean that was his buddy. That was his, you know, he had it as a puppy with him through all this craziness.
So you know, I actually want to say, you know, I actually enjoyed this movie. I really do. It's one that I have actually seen more than I've seen. You know, the other, what did Brian pick the other day?
Oh, Children of Men.
Children of Men. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that one like 4 times. And that one's gotten worse and worse to me over the years. But this one is one for me that I enjoy every time I see it.
So which half of this movie do you like the better, the first half or the second? Because I think these are kind of two distinct
movies.
You
know, I'll agree with you on that. And that kind of goes with what John is saying for the audience members
out
there. John would agree with me here is that the first half of this movie is before he meets the woman and the kid. And the second half of this movie is after. So that would be kind of where I'd break it off at. And I agree with you. I like the first part.
And I would also include part of that being he changes when his dog dies, too. I would also include that in there.
He does. But
he wasn't as brutal.
Yeah, he got angry after his dog died and went a little crazy. And
but I totally
I understand.
Agree with you.
But I see that as the second half of the film is when the woman and her kid is introduced into it. And I was wondering if I was the only one that caught that. Did you guys notice that when Batman and Superman is in theaters, when the world happens? Did you guys see that poster in there?
I did.
It was the same exact one that they're using for Batman and Superman.
So
Ben Affleck, you caused the end of the world. Back away from Batman.
I knew hell froze over as soon as that happened. What's next? Kevin Smith writing Superman?
But, you know, I really got to say, I do enjoy this film. I am actually a big fan of Will Smith. I think he has done a lot of things that show his acting ability moving outside of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which I think is one of my favorite roles by him, but I don't think it is his best role.
I think this is before he started doing the atypical roles for him. Like, 'cause the last 5 to 6 years haven't been good. This is kind of, in my opinion, his stride as an actor.
His last good film.
Yeah, one of them, yeah. And I thought he did a really good job in this movie, especially considering he's pretty much carrying the whole thing.
What did he do after this movie? I mean, since you're saying this is his last
best. I think it was...
Just out of curiosity.
It was like
that statement.
After Earth, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I think he didn't do anything for a while after this film. Let's pull that up. Because I think he did Men in Black after, then after Earth. Hancock as well in there.
See, Hancock I thought was a decent movie.
He did some, that's my point.
I'm not sure if Hancock was after this. Yes, it was. Okay,
yeah,
so we have...
This one was
07.
According to... Yeah, it said it was 2007 was when this movie was made.
Well, I don't see it. Why don't I see it?
Anyway...
Because, look, 2003, 2006, and then this.
But, yeah, I mean, because if you take a look at the movies, he did in 08, you know, Human Contract, Lakeview Terrace, 7 Pounds, which I heard was a great movie.
I heard that was as well, but if I look at it, Hancock is the one that I really enjoyed after this film. And The Pursuit of Happiness.
Right, that's a good one. And, of course, I liked all the
Why I pulled up acting. Okay.
And all the Men in Black. But anyway, with this movie, the reason I chose this movie is because I think it showed a wide variety of Will Smith's acting abilities in it. And it is just, it's kind of pre-zombies, where everything turns into zombies. Yeah. So, I mean, that, you know, they don't call them zombies in this movie. So it was, you know, pre that craziness.
Well, but, I think, you know, these more were kind of vampire-ish creatures.
Well, what happened, what was interesting is the main creature man in that area, anyway, actually had enough, he still had
cognitive,
some,
yeah.
He had some humanity still in him, which was very interesting.
Well, because this is originally a book, and in the book, it's actual a vampire disease or whatnot spreads over the world, and if I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I've read really anything about it. It was like there were like really smart ones, and then there were obviously, you know, followers and.
Well, that's what they showed in this, and they
so kind of like a vampire hierarchy. The thing that I really enjoyed in this film is that when they started out, they've got so much great things happening. They've cured cancer. They've got all these really cool things going on, but then all of a sudden that cure basically becomes the detriment of it and destroys humanity. And that's the way they play it off in the movie, from what I understand.
Yeah. They do. And it's the only thing that bothered me a little bit is that it was only a 3-year window.
Yeah.
And if they had done their testing correctly, most FDA stuff takes way longer than 3 years before it comes out. So, they kind of jumped on it. Oh, it cures all cancer, so we got to do it right away.
It sounded to me like they did a limited test run, being a lot of people.
Must have been very limited.
But I remember them saying something like that, you know. But
well, what he kind of points out is that there's a small percentage that were immune.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Him being one of them. And then, but everybody else was easily contracted.
Mm-hmm.
So those patients that were tested on were able to infect other people just like that. And then it became, and he even throws out the numbers.
Isn't it interesting? They used the measles vaccine. And what have we just had a outbreak of?
A measles vaccine.
Measles. Yeah. So, measles are highly contagious.
It's all your fault, Ben Affleck.
It's kind of interesting. I when I saw that, I went, I had forgotten that part. And then I went, wow.
Yeah, there are some really cool things in this film that you can watch again and get enjoyment out of.
Yep.
And it was interesting how they actually transitioned from night to day for the story.
Yeah.
As far as having the actual dream sequences and trying to explain more of this the story.
Yeah.
Sometimes I thought it was a little disjointed, but I actually thought it was kind of clever how they try to explain his backstory a little without really having him tell anybody or it being narrated.
Right.
Yeah, I think they did I think you're right. There was maybe one or two spots that seemed a little disjointed when they threw it in. But I think all in all, the way they did it, where he was kind of like daydreaming in some parts and things like that, I think they did it smoothly.
Yeah, they did pretty good. You know, I was reading.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do. They keep everything in line. I was reading the goofs. There actually are quite a long list of goofs, but they all, as a whole, are minor to the story.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they're nitpicking.
Yeah, I mean, there were little things like, okay, he locked up everything when he went to sleep, but when he woke up that morning, the window was open. Little details every now and then, I guess.
Well, the thing is that people that do that, well, they don't also take into account that he could have done that in this point. Yeah. Or at this point.
He could have gotten up early, opened up, sun was out, went back to bed. You don't know. There's all kinds of ways of doing things.
The other part I just kind of thought of, it could have been a stylistic choice of the director, realizing maybe this scene just needs more light, and then let's open it up, and then hopefully that nobody's going to really be pedantic and say, well, that's not right because that doesn't carry on from the last scene.
Yeah. Actually, the director is the guy who's been doing The Hunger Games.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and it does make sense. He also did one that I actually enjoyed, which was Kings, which was basically a modern telling story of King David back in the way. It was a very interesting thing. He only did a couple episodes of that, but Constantine, and then it looks like music videos.
God.
Which is interesting.
Constantine. Wow.
So that kind of explains a lot of the way that the movie was done, the directing and style and things like that. But I think it fit well with this film.
Yeah, and that definitely, you're right. That definitely explains the pacing and the cut. It explains even the angles when they came into the hive area when he discovered that girl. That explains kind of a lot. Because according to this, the thing he did before Constantine was a Britney Spears music video.
Yeah. And a J-Lo music video and things like that. That's, you know, coming from that into film, I think you did a decent transition.
Yeah. What do you give this movie?
You know, I give this one a 4. I think the rewatchability of this film, and what I was saying is that you can see different things that that you didn't remember before or you had forgotten, and it just kind of fits with some of the things that we see in our time of day. You know, we see Batman Superman coming out with this very similar logo. We see measles outbreaks that they're fighting and trying to get vaccinated and getting rid of, things like that. I don't think that it's all precursors to what's happened in the film or the book, but
I thought it was interesting.
I think it's interesting and fun.
Yeah.
And I am happy that you have zombie-esque creatures without the fad of The Walking Dead, or, you know, or even, you don't want to go back far, you know, farther in George R. Romero kind of starting it. So I'm really happy.
Those are some good films.
Well, yeah, but I'm really happy that it's not like today, because if this made it today, it would be zombie-esque instead
of the... Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which I'm kind of tired of, honestly. So.
And I don't think you're alone with being tired of it. I think we're going to start seeing pulling away from calling everything a zombie. But for me, I enjoyed this movie again. I picked it. I'm gonna give it 4.5.
Wow.
Yeah, because I really liked Will Smith in this. I thought it was right on. I mean, I really enjoyed watching this movie. Yeah, there are a few things that bugged me, but I'm willing to forgive them just because I enjoyed the movie.
Wow. I'm giving this movie a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
I liked it. I liked the story. I like how somehow the person who read it, who wrote it and directed it, definitely some prognostication.
I bet he read it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope he read his work.
my grammar's amazing.
Hey, I was the one who couldn't read the opening.
How, you know, like kind of little prognostication. That part I like. The rewatchability for me, I've seen it a couple of times. I'm not sure if it's something I could rewatch a lot. But I'll definitely agree on James. You know, this is you pick up on subtle things, but for me, it's a strong 3 out of 5.
Okay.
And now we're going to switch to our theater pick, and we did American Sniper. Anybody have what that one's about?
Well, it's Navy SEAL sniper Chris Kyle's pinpoint accuracy saves countless lives on the battlefield and turns him into a legend. Back home to his wife and kids after... That's a weird transition. Back home to his wife and kids after 4 tours of duty. However, Chris finds that it is the war he can't leave behind.
And we're going to do something a tad bit different this time. We actually had Rob not watch the movie, but he reread the book. And so we're kind of comparing and contrasting something we've done a little bit here on Real Flicks Review. So
yeah.
Pardon our dust here. The thing I want to say first off is Clint Eastwood has actually gone on record in saying this is an anti-war movie. And I actually see it, but it's not a traditional anti-war movie. They really play up the action scenes and you really enjoy it, but I think it's anti-war because you get to see the effects it had on Chris Kyle and in his family life. And I was actually amazed how fair-handed this was, especially to some of the vets I've talked to, you know, about their experiences.
Yeah, I have to agree with John there. I thought that Clint Eastwood got to be one of my favorite directors, producers, and actors of all time. I thought he did an amazing job showing the strange connection that a soldier has in coming home. Because there was times when he was sitting in the car and just looking around, even at the birthday party thing, that you could just tell on this actor's face. And I have to give props to Bradley Cooper.
Oh, yeah,
Cooper for playing this role, dude. You did an amazing job in the way that his face was. And I have a brother who's come back from 3 tours in Iraq. And I could see the same things that I see in his face when he was initially coming back, that he would... You could just tell that they didn't fit in.
And Chris Kyle's wife and one of his friends actually said that Bradley Cooper like picked up on his mannerisms. His wife actually said for a while there, I thought I was watching Chris.
Wow.
And I thought that's...
And he does look like Chris, yeah, too, by the way.
In a way, you look side pictures, by side. Right.
They look very similar.
I kind of think for an actor that's supposed to be on a biopic, I thought that was probably the greatest compliment you could you could probably be told is, wow, I didn't realize this was him.
He really became the man in the movie, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes,
you know, for me in the book's a different, you know, different story in this case. There's no actors to point to, but the storyline itself is, from my understanding, is very similar. I think what was really interesting, and he talked about this a lot in the book, is that, you know, as a sniper, it was his job to, you know, go on the high points where all the snipers are to be, and to oversee the troops as they are going into these buildings. And it's his job to try to get, you know, the obvious people that are out to get his troops, his guys. And he was known for moving positions a lot to get into the right place. He wasn't one of these snipers that was happy with just sitting in one spot for hours and hours and hours. He said, if I can't see what I need right away, I want to go to where I can see what I need.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made him one of the most successful snipers. You know, one of the things is, you know, you have to have the confirmed kill situation. So generally the confirmed kills are done by your spotter and sometimes the guys on the ground as well. There's a little question is if he did, you know, reach that number, but it doesn't matter. The fact was is the guy was there to support his troops. Mm-hmm. He was had an amazing ability to find the enemy. And this is one of the things that they really used him for. He knew, he just had a way of knowing, okay, there are going to be guys here, there are going to be guys here. And the other thing that he did in the book that I don't know if you saw it in the movie or not, but he also broke away from the traditional, I'm a sniper, I stay up high and I don't do anything.
They did one scene.
There was one scene, and I guess...
He went down with the Marines and kicked in the door.
Yeah. That's right.
Because
he saw a green troop
It seemed like he had the first door he kicked in is the way the movie portrayed it.
Mm.
It wasn't necessarily the first door he kicked in, but he kicked in one of the doors and they immediately found a guy who happened to have the information he needed.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that's kind of what it seemed like, and I'm almost certain that was not the first door he
kicked in the book, with this guy. Right. In the book it was, I'm sorry, Jonathan, in the book it was, he saw, it was a group of basically Marines, and he knew they were walking right into a trap.
Yeah,
and he had to do something about it. And
yeah, they did play
that. Because in that same scene, he actually gave them tips before they broke in, and he was saying, "You're gonna want to do this."
Exactly.
And they say yes. And the other part I thought was really pretty cool is before he went down, his spotter or his guard or whatever exactly you call him, he was just laying back, having fun and relaxing, if you can actually do that in a war zone. And Chris Kyle said, "I'm going down there." He said, "Well, have fun." He said, "Well, if you're not coming with me, I don't want to see you ever again."
Yeah, he said, "You better not be here when I come back."
And the other part that I actually thought was I thought was probably the greatest little gimme or whatever you want to call it was the scene when the guys walked into one of his hides and the guy said, "This smells like piss." The reason why is because as a sniper, you can't really let off.
Yeah, you don't get up to pee.
You don't get a whole lot of breaks. I mean, they say you're not supposed to have eyes on the target all the time. But to me, I heard that and I'm like, at least they understand what a sniper's position, the role was. So I actually thought that was, you know, it's like, oh, that was cool. That was a little bit of information that, you know, like the sniper movies that have come up before wouldn't have.
I looked at a lot of SEAL training before my accident working, and I think they did a great job showing SEAL training early and just kind of a overall cover of it. They didn't show everything, but they showed how those instructors are. And they're pretty good. There are SEALs that are training these guys. And they don't back off. And I thought they did a decent job of showing that. The whole movie wasn't about that. But I thought that was a good little overview to show what he kind of was. Mm-hmm. And that he was a frogman. And that's really what they were. And I enjoyed the fact that they used that term. That was the term they used before they changed it to SEALs.
Yeah, it was,
they called them frogmen.
Yeah, it was a UDT, Underwater Demolitions. Jesse Ventura was technically a UDT.
One of the things I want to point out was, now, did you guys catch, you both have seen, Full Metal Jacket, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys catch the homage to them in the film?
Not in the book.
There was a guy on the roof when they're getting pinned down and he's shooting back and he started saying, get some mother.
No, I didn't
catch
that.
So Animal Mother did get props in the film, and I thought that was really cool.
That's funny. No, I totally don't.
But awesome. Now one of my big faux pas in this film, and I don't understand why Clint Eastwood did it, but the nursery scene.
Oh.
When she's sitting there with the baby that's supposed to be crying, and he picks it up, that was a doll.
Mm-hmm.
That was so a doll. And it was very easily to tell that that was a doll. Do you remember that?
For those, well, Chris, I didn't see the movie, but
was that when his
for a new parent, I can see why
he
was.
No, no, like it was literally just a stiff-legged doll that he was holding and trying to fumble with. But it was when he was in the nursery and she was talking to him, and he was kind of saying, you know, I'm gonna go back on another tour. And she's like, "What are you doing? You know, you have a family here." And I thought that was really good.
I never caught that actually.
Anyways, go back and watch it. You will blatantly see. Now, I was trying to debate whether or not the actor in this film was overplaying the recoil. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
There was a few scenes that I was kind of like, you know, I really don't think that a sniper would take recoil the way that the actor was portraying it.
I don't think it was, for one, I think it would depend on the type of rifle, and I think his was, yeah. His was a semi-automatic.
Yeah, he switched rifles, though. But did you notice that?
I wasn't paying that close
attention. Okay, he switched rifles a couple times.
But in all honesty...
So I wasn't sure which one he was portraying at that time. So go on.
In all honesty, it didn't bother me, because my opinion is in film, you know, I think if you do that, you act that. I think it kind of gets the point across to the audience, the physicality of firing a weapon.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Which versus, you know, you get the Arnold Schwarzenegger and he's picking up a minigun going, you know, nothing happens. So
yeah, yeah.
That part to me was kind of a forgivable.
Well, I was kind of wondering if they actually took the actor out and, you know, had him fire.
Well, they had
the guns. And I think Clint Eastwood would do his homework on that, too.
Well, they did that for Angelina Jolie in The Tomb Raider, so why not do it in a movie that is, well, in my opinion, a better movie? And talk about that. I give this a 5 out of 5. I really enjoyed the movie.
Okay.
I
think to get down to that, I agree with you. My wife, who watched the film, and she doesn't like news, she didn't actually know that Chris Kyle died.
Mm.
She was in tears when she found out and was really pissed off at the film. Like, this movie's stupid. And I said, well, you're only saying that because you enjoyed it as much as you did. And on that, I got to agree. I think this film did justice to Chris Kyle. And I think it showed really the hard look of what a sniper would have to do in that situation where he's got to choose... You know, that one scene where that kid's picking up the RPG and he's like, dude, just put it down.
Yeah.
Just put it down. Please, put it down.
Or his first kill.
And the kid finally dropped it. And yeah, his first kill where he had to do that to woman and child.
Yeah.
That, and that guy like trying to say, oh, I'll give you props. He's like, don't even do it. Don't. Just don't even do it.
And... I do want to add.
I think he did a great job in showing the heartbrokenness that you would go through in that situation.
No, totally.
Because he is a person.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And I want to add one of the reasons I love this movie the most is his sole reason for going back was kind of vengeance because of what the guy did to his friends and his fellow soldiers. And I've talking to people who have been in situations in the military. They if they had a chance to do it, they would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was like, I liked the fact they showed kind of the grittiness, a little bit of the grittiness of how the feelings and the emotions of it. I doubt it's all of it, but that's the part I like the most.
And I do like what he said to the VA psychologist, is that I will answer for every shot.
Mm-hmm.
I will answer for every shot I took before God, and I'm willing to do that. And I think that's something as a sniper out in the field.
Because it's up close and personal, too.
Yeah. And you got to make those decisions. And if you squeeze the trigger, if you do that, you have to answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
So IMDb agreed with you on the dolls, the babies.
Did you?
Yeah, they agreed. The babies are obviously prop dolls.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sad for a movie with... What was it, 58 million dollars.
And especially since it broke every box office record.
Yeah, 58,800,000.
So what do you, since you haven't, like we said, so seen the book? Movie. Yeah, what would you, if knowing what you know about the movie well, now you, from hearing us.
And, let's just put it this way. Okay, so you read the book.
And I saw the trailers.
What did you think of the story what did you think of the story in the book?
I loved the book. So I really
did.
You
think that you would enjoy the movie as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I do. Okay, yeah, cool. I really loved the book. I thought, and there are other people who have read the book are saying, of course, it's just Chris Kyle pumping himself up, that he really didn't do some of the things he said he did. I think, Jonathan, you were talking at one point, he was called the Legend of...
According to what I heard, somebody called him the Devil of Ramadi.
The Devil of Ramadi.
I guess that's what he called himself. And hearing news reports and soldiers there at the time, how much is real, I don't know. They said nobody ever called him that.
If it was said in the book, I don't remember it. Mm-hmm. So if it was said, it was maybe said one time. Mm-hmm. But that's it. Well, here we have, I don't know if that's our phone or not, doesn't matter. None of us have headsets on.
No.
Anyway, no, I really like the book, and I would suggest, I highly suggest that if you guys get a chance to read the book, I think it's worth the read.
Okay.
So, I know it's not a book club, but...
I read some of those other ones by Andy Rooney of World War II, and those were enjoyable.
Well, you should read Carlos Hathcock's book.
Yeah,
I've been wanting to.
There's two. There's one he actually wrote, and it's like White Feathered, the Story of Long Train, and there's or something like that. And there's one that came out way later called 99 Confirmed Kills, the story of Carlos Hathcock, the third. And with that, we're actually going to switch to House of Cards, Episode 2. And with that, we're going to go to James.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I got to say my prediction of this is really kind of being spot on. He's really... kind of like a Godfather-esque character who is pulling all the little strings behind his back.
It's the government.
Narcissistic. He's got all he cares about. And all he cares about is power. He doesn't even care about money. All he cares about power and his ability to control the whole picture. That's all he cares about.
And what he said about his wife with the row machine.
Right.
You know, he's like, I don't want to be told what to do, when to do it, anywhere. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, Kevin Spacey, I do like you. Take a chill pill.
Well... I actually like the character.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of him yet. He's got to grow on me a little bit more than
I really like the character. The other part I kind of liked is I'm seeing a little foreshadowing of the news reporter.
Yeah.
There was a scene, and I don't 100% remember it, but there was a conversation between her and Kevin Spacey, and you kind of see the look where she knows she's stuck.
Mm, yeah.
You know what scene I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I don't remember the conversation. I think it was the one where they were in the subway, and the thing revolves around that. And her conversation was, "Well, he didn't do it," and you know his comment and the reflection. I love that because you could see it's like now she's lying in her own bed.
Do you remember when she first came to him? She wore this low cut dress with a push up bra.
Yeah.
And all this, and she walks in, and he talks to her. He says, "Does that seriously still work today?" That was a great line.
Yeah.
And also, I just love the looking at the camera angles, you know.
Yeah.
Something will happen, he'll just look at the camera and smile. And I like...
I do like that. I do like him breaking...
That whole thing is... What a neat idea.
I love the breaking of the fourth wall. That is my sole favorite part, when he looks in the audience and says, you know, I love that.
Yeah, I do enjoy that.
There's a new commercial out. I couldn't tell you what it's for, but they have him in it doing that type of thing. But it shows you the commercial didn't work because I can't tell you the product. But I noticed Kevin Spacey doing his thing.
So here's a quick question. To me, I don't think this movie, the show, would be as good without the Zach Morris pause moments.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. To me, that makes everything when you get to see kind of inside the character's mind.
Yeah, I enjoy that, and I agree with you. I don't think that this show would be as entertaining if he wasn't doing that.
Do you think it adds... To me, it seems to add like maybe a sense of humor, a lighter note, in a very dark
show. Most definitely, I think it adds a sense of humor to it. So, that, I gotta give him on that. I'm just feeling like there's certain parts of it that is not grabbing my attention and interest yet.
It could be there.
But it's one of those where it's like, it's not enough to where I just, whatever. But it's not enough to be like, okay, I'm ready for the next episode.
Oh no, see, I'm kind of the opposite. I'm really hard to get into TV shows, and like I want to see the next episode really bad.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not there yet. I just think that it might take a little bit more for me to be there.
Oh no, totally. I could totally see
I
that.
I understand that. I'm liking it so far. So far, so good for me.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm hoping it's not like some shows I've gotten into, really like it, and then just hits, it just starts hitting its stride, and it's just like, okay, now this show sucks. How did it go from great to good, but great to sucky? So we'll see.
Okay.
For me, kind of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was like that a little.
Yeah, I just
I was
kinda,
into it for a while, then I had a hard time
getting episodes in.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of news.
Okay.
I got to give Jennifer Lawrence. I do like this woman. I think she's going to be one to keep an eye on. She seems to be knowing when to call it quits. She is done with the X-Men after Apocalypse. And really? I think that really says something about her her decision-making.
What character does she play?
She plays Mystique.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So I think it's really cool that she's saying, okay, after this film, I'm done playing this character. I want to move on. I think I got to give her props on making that decision.
Because
that's a big moneymaker.
Oh,
to play Mystique, she could milk that.
But Agents of the Apocalypse movie, is that part of
the
first
X-Men.
Class?
That's the next one.
Why no, but is that actually part of the first class universe?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was.
I was under the impression it was.
Oh, that's badass.
It seems like it's the same characters.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's what really I'm thinking.
Cool.
And
maybe she gave a little backstory to the old guy. Because... About Apocalypse?
No, I don't think there needs to be any backstory on Apocalypse.
Don't worry about it.
It's just another bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay,
so that's all in his mind. I know
who Mystique is too, by the way.
Well, I knew that.
Surprise.
This really says something when David Hasselhoff comes out of nowhere and says Sharknado 3 is horrible. It's going to be the worst film that you have seen.
Really?
David Hasselhoff said that. Now, that's saying something.
What's
this
movie about?
It's Sharknado.
Sharknado 3.
Oh.
You know Sharks in a Tornado?
Yeah.
Sharknado 3.
He must have been listening to the car again.
Well, I got to say something of the thing of...
Never listen to the car, Hoff.
Man,
we love you.
No, like, how bad must this be? Because I actually turned Sharknado off in 10 minutes.
And in all
the first one.
In all honesty...
So Hasselhoff's coming out and saying the third one is the worst film ever?
You know, in all honesty, it's one of these films that I think if you take seriously, you're actually on something, because I think this movie somehow was supposed to be a romp and fun, and it just looks like the worst thing on cinematic history. Even Troma's going, dear God, why?
He's in this film.
Wow.
Hasselhoff is in this
film. So is Chris Jericho, the wrestler.
And this is what he quotes on to the Huffington Post. He says, you know, it's the worst movie you have ever seen. The first one was the worst. The second one, I think, was even worse than the first. I'm so honored to be in Sharknado 3.
So it can't be as bad as him and as Nick Fury.
Oh, jeez, yeah. You didn't even have to bring that up.
Yeah,
that's mean.
Yeah, yes,
that's
I did.
Mean.
I just
don't even say that about him. But yeah, you know, like, the dude who played Nick Fury is in this film, and he's saying that this one, oh, man. Like, why are people out there doing this? I mean, you are the Troma fans out there, guys. You gotta be.
No, because I think even Troma people at this point are like, why? Just
so,
why?
So, you Troma fans, Sharknado fans, you can look forward to this one coming out in July 22nd, 2015.
You gotta separate the Troma and Sharknado fans.
And look forward
to
it. It's even got Bo Derek in it.
Really?
Whoa, really? Damn.
Oh.
Wow.
You know, it's like they're digging stars up out of nowhere.
I love that. The old Southern, bless her
bless
heart.
Bless her heart.
So,
yeah.
next, jeez.
Sorry. I had to do it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, Chris Jericho is in there.
So next, oh, wow.
Jeez, Jerry Springer.
He's got to do something. So next month, we're doing horror, which is the first time that theme's actually been brought up. So I can't guarantee it'll be good horror, bad horror. It just might be horror. Or horrible. So the first one I'm doing is the first Resident Evil. In my humble opinion, or not so humble opinion, it's the only Resident Evil worth watching.
Okay.
So
we're
doing that one. And so I gave the movie I Am Legend a 3 to 5. James gave it a 4 to 5. Rob gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Kind of wondering why he didn't just kick it over to 5. We'll have to ask him later.
Quite there.
You got it. Exactly right.
And I gave them
color palette was just...
And I gave the American Sniper a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 5 out of 5. Rob will give it a must.
I'll give the book a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, or a must see for the movie.
Or a must read.
And hopefully we'll see Ryan soon after he gets over the flu from Earth Girls Are Easy.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad. Cry, baby.
It was. It was. And as always, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.